Welcome to JSA TV Europe, together with the Green Data Movement, for this quarter's live event focused on European digital infrastructure sustainability. I'm Jean-Marc Lehmann. Joining me today is Karen Bass, CEO of IX Acquisition. And Karen, pleasure seeing you again.
Always great to see you, Jean. Always.
Thank you. So sustainability in digital infrastructure, more specifically data centers, this is a massive topic that no matter where you go in the world, people talk about it, especially in Europe, it has become tremendously big. Especially over the COVID period, and more so in recent months after some more widely consumed documentaries made by some broadcasters in Europe. If we're looking to investment, financing investments towards sustainable data centers, what would you say are the major trends defining this space this year?
I think it's a really interesting topic. And as you say, it's becoming the hot topic. I think you have to go back sort of 15, 20 years to see where we've come from as a sector. And I kind of think if I look at a sector, we had this huge need, and this need for what we do is growing every day. So whether it's data for healthcare, whether it's Netflix, whether it's generative AI, whatever, there's this huge need for computer power and storage. In the last 15, 20 years as well, we've had better and better technology to deliver that. So whether it's, you know, we got rid of certain constraints on how much computing power you can have in a box or how much heating you can have around a rack, all of those things have allowed us speed to market to hit this need. And you can argue that actually a lot of that happened with no consequence of sustainability or no thought to sustainability. And that's probably unfair to a lot of people, but actually a lot of it did. And our focus on power was around cost, and it was a selfish, you know, us as a business, let's make more profit and allow our customers to make profit. I think that is absolutely changing. So over the last, I would say really the last 3 or 4 years, sustainability has gone from being passion projects of people who really cared, who actually wanted to save the climate and the planet. And we've gone from true focus. And I say true with a slight cynicism. I think we're still in a stage where some people do this because they have to, and some people do this because they really, really believe in it. And the have to, I have to say, is a great thing, actually. Forced to do something good is not a bad place to be. That have to is coming from the ultimate investors. So it's the LPs within the PE houses. It's the LPs behind the banks, the shareholders behind the banks, et cetera. It's being forced down through the financial system. And it's really coming from all of our customers. So whether it's media customers, whether it's crypto, whatever, whoever customers, the hyperscalers, all of them are getting that pressure from the ultimate users and the consumers. So all of that said, I think we created over the last 15, 20 years this kind of hungry sector machine or animal, if you like, that needed more and more cash. And as investors, you know, the early investors into data centers almost took a risk. They didn't really understand, you know, the sector wasn't very mature. As we've matured, more investors have come in. And with that, it's actually quite easy to go and get money. I mean, it's never easy, but actually it's quite easy to go and get funding. And it's almost the seller's market from a data center point of view. I can pick who my investor is. Now, all of that said, and you put the sustainability on it, you've got investors who really do care. You've got data center operators who really do care. And the fundamentals of any sort of, you know, I'll come back to trends in a second, the fundamentals of any sector or any partnership or any transaction, to make it work, it needs to be genuinely win-win on both sides. So I think what we're seeing over sort of 22, sort of last year, I think a few things came together, absolutely sustainability funding. So it's green bonds, it's all sort of real, and banks actually saying, well, I'll charge you more, or I'm not even going to give you sort of a debt facility if you're not sustainable. I think that's fantastic. Again, it's that pressure. I think as a sector, what's been really interesting is that we created this hungry machine that needed feeding. And we sort of didn't do a mature curve like a camelback. We kind of did a giraffe growth, you know, like a giraffe neck. We've gone right up there. And I think over the last year or so, we've sort of peaked on the top of the ear and are coming down on the head. I think we're beginning to plateau where we are. And I think it's this stage now where that sustainability will become so much more of an issue, because at one day we will come down the giraffe's neck or some other animal. But it's before that happens, we're taking this shift where everyone just gets it, finds themselves into the right place and the right things happening. And I think one more factor that's really important in all of this, because it skews everything that goes on in the sector, is that we've got these huge behemoths now. We've got a real sort of polarization of size of businesses in data center, particularly. So the likes of, you know, Equinix, obviously 240 or 250 data centers, the likes of Digital Bridge, who I think have got 28, 29 billion under management, whether directly or indirectly. You know, just how do you, as a small player, disrupt that? Can you start a new Equinix? Can you start a new Digital Bridge? All of those things make it more complex. And it means actually the smart money and a lot of the initiatives come from those big players. And therefore, okay, they have the benefit of that. They also have a huge responsibility to do good for the whole sector and for the planet.
There's quite a lot of things to...
Not concise,
especially about the newer players. That's quite interesting, because the ones that we've been seeing being born in Europe recently, their strategy really revolves around just pure green power, and that's their big differentiator. And they can start afresh. They don't have to retrofit facilities. They don't have anything like that. They just start afresh. I'm talking about, you've got Start Campus in Portugal. You've got Hyperco in Finland. And there's, of course, Nordic's massive example of all this, but Hyperco is the newest one over there. So that's quite interesting. Have you heard of green shushing?
Green?
Shushing.
No.
This was something that I learned from Paul Hastings at PTC. So green shushing, because I think it goes kind of in line to what you're saying about the giraffe and then starting to plateau and come down, where all this money has gone towards sustainability and making sure business turn green. But there's been a lot of overpromise and under-deliverance. And now operators are starting to shush a little bit the non-results that they have. Do you think that's kind of what's happening with your analogy as well? Or
I think maybe in some places I can see why that would be, because especially people have good intentions and so they announce great things, but actually execution is always harder than you think. So I suspect that is happening in some places. To your point, in the smaller businesses, you can start from scratch and it's easier. You're not retrofitting.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the days of 15, 20 years ago, you could start a data center business with 5 million quid. But you can't do that now.
That's great. Not even translated.
So, you know, let's go straight out there with half a billion or a billion. It's different players. The market's very different. And therefore, for me, those leaders, the big guys, have got a lot of responsibility.
We were saying that there's a lot of capital out there. We are still in a position that we can kind of choose who we want to get the money from and who we want to give hands to. How long do you think that the data center space has left in a position like that? Because that's quite a good position to be in. I'm sure it's not something that you have in hospitality and office real estate. It's very different markets, though, especially after COVID. How long do we have until we go into something a lot more complicated to navigate?
If I had the real answer to that, I think I'd be a billionaire, because that's a crystal ball question. And
are
sitting,
you a billionaire?
And, sadly not. And I'm sitting in a WeWork, so it's a very useful example of hospitality and office blocks. Who knows? I mean, I think the big disruptors are years away. So quantum will disrupt us at some point, but it's not tomorrow. I think we're still in an evolution, not a revolution. I think that's going to be a while. I think actually the nearer term risks for businesses, whether it's financial, whether it's about sustainability, whatever, actually, I think we as a sector are maturing, the organisations are maturing, so sort of park the new players in the moment. The risks from that are over sort of almost too much adrenaline. So if I'm an investor and I've got 20 billion, 10 billion, 30 billion to deploy, I'm going to have pressure to deploy. I'm going to make decisions that are a bit quick, and I might deploy too much in too many places and not actually have the time or resource to make sure those businesses are performing, to really get those teams up to scratch. And similarly, as an operator, I might deploy in a location I kind of regret a little bit afterwards. And I think also as we get bigger, we get a little bit more complacent. You know, you kind of think we are a resilient sector. That's why investors love us. And we're proven now, you know, we're 20, 30 years in. But it's easy to say, that risk won't happen. And, you know, that risk review, it just becomes a tick box. And, the debt will be fine. And actually, I think every board needs to sit back every 6 months, a year, get an external challenge to what they're doing and say, you know, have you thought about this? Or, you know, by the way, there's a big bear behind you and you've not even noticed. And I think, and sort of slightly more, and coming back to sustainability and sort of us as leaders of the world and doing good things for all our stakeholders, I think there's a complacency in a sector. If you remember from your studies, the Maslow hierarchy of needs, where, you know, it's all about you've got enough food and then you've got security, etc. The top of that triangle is self-actualization, which is about being the best you possibly can. And I think a lot of our businesses are at the top of the triangle. They're not in survival mode. They're absolutely up there. And the bad side of that is you end up navel gazing. You spend a huge amount of time looking at logos or, you know, making your sustainability policy nicer. But actually, they've got the resource and the ability to really go out and do huge amounts for, you know, not just sustainability, but education, diversity and inclusion, effort, social mobility.
Yeah, but it's funny that you said that, and I won't go into specifics of it, but we have seen a lot of PowerPoints becoming a lot better. And a lot of internal, and it's by PowerPoints, I also mean there's a lot of internal consumption at the moment as opposed to consumption going outside of the data halls into the wider public, a little bit touching on what you just said. So there seems to be a much more, it's us and it's internal and it's for us, from us, for us kind of thing at the moment. I think after COVID, that's kind of what happened a little bit. The sector got a little bit, it closed off a little bit more than what it was before COVID. It was coming down a way which was opening up, and then with COVID kind of closed off a tiny little bit.
Which is understandable because we all had to go in that sort of survival mode, if you like.
And make decisions as well.
Yeah, and make good decisions. But I think when you get to a certain size, it's like, you know, civil service or the NHS in the UK or big organisations, you start policing yourself. And for me, that's a risk because we've got this huge opportunity to do good for the world in so many ways. I think we need to be outward looking.
Absolutely. Not taking away from all you just said, I know we just pressed for time a little bit. If we look into finance and investment trends this year, how do you think 2023 is going to cope with the last few record-breaking years? Are we going to see the same amount of capital coming into play? For instance, yesterday we heard Tor Equities. It wasn't yesterday they announced. They announced a few months ago, but now they rebranded as Formation Data Centers. But they're looking at a $9 billion acquisition spree across Europe, which sounds quite a lot. And like them, there's a lot of companies out there that have those kind of targets, $2 billion, $3 billion. So how do you expect 2023 to unfold money-wise?
I expect to see some big funds, still new funds or funds raising extra money. I expect to see those big numbers still in 23, and I think that will continue to 24. I'm not sure what happens then, because at some point, you know, I'm trying to use this sort of giraffe analogy. We are on that top. We cannot be a forever growing giraffe. To your point, we are on the moon, but I think we are still seeing those big funds, but I think some of them will start getting scared and their LPs will start getting scared. You know, these are beautiful, resilient businesses, but there are risks. There are always risks. And again, going back to don't get complacent. So I think we'll see that. When it comes down to financing, I think absolutely 2023 will totally reinforce the sustainability message. Yeah. And I think we will get to a point, maybe even in 24, 25, you cannot, probably even now, actually, in some places, you cannot raise money without a true sustainability policy that you genuinely believe in, and you cannot get cheap money doing it.
Yeah. Well, in the banking space, there is one of the main topics. It's sustainability and human capital. Are two very important aspects of any business if you're looking for money. So you've really got to pay attention to it. I was going to ask as well, because, I mean, the world is in quite a strange place at the moment.
Interesting place.
interesting and challenging space. There is a shifting global marketplace happening. There's a lot of macroeconomic activity that is going against the tide here. What would you say are the major opportunities and challenges still for data centers in Europe in the face of all this? I mean, there's recession fears, because we aren't in recession yet. Cost of living crisis. We just had a big scare with SVB in the past week, not even a couple of weeks, at least like not even a week.
We had last few days. Yes.
Exactly. SVB in the last few days, so a bit of economic fear going on at the moment, especially with on the venture capitalist side, especially with startups. And then, of course, we have the awful war in Ukraine. We have things unfolding in China, in Taiwan, in the US. How does all this play into the risks for data center operators, and what are the challenges and opportunities out of it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors there.
Condense everything into like a 2-minute answer.
I think sometimes, you know what, you just want to keep things simple. So actually, if I run my business well and I've got a clear strategy and I'm aware of what's going on, actually, that's the best way to survive and to do, you know, give my investors a good return or whatever it is I'm trying to do. Keep it simple. I'm a big believer in keep it simple. And so when you look at operationally, it's, you know, there are more and more technologies out there allowing you to be more efficient within the data center, whether it's, you know, AI analysis of the hotspots or whatever it is. There's more and more technology out there. There are more growth opportunities, but it's hard to go and find a tier one. You know, it's impossible to find in Europe a tier one city that's not got data centers. You know, finding somewhere where there's space is different. You know, that brings all sorts of other questions. But so I think there are opportunities, but a lot of it, I think, contradictory what I said earlier about, you know, we have a risk of navel gazing and looking internally. Actually, sometimes the opportunity is internally to make itself more productive. I don't think cost, famous last words, I don't think cost of living is a big issue. As companies, we run with very few people, so our payroll inflation is limited. Obviously, power is a different thing, but we're all passing through power. I think the biggest thing comes from the sectors who you're selling to. So, yeah, like in COVID, if you were selling to only retail customers, well, you felt that. But if you're sort of more diversified and deconcentrated, that's different. And then I think right now, to your point earlier, that there's an opportunity now to take money that matches what you want to do. And that might not be there in 5 years' time.
Okay. I like the whole concept of just keep it simple. Keep it simple to carry on. Couldn't be more of a British answer to anything. And it's not you, Grant, because at least you didn't look away. Karen, as well, so you also have a very interesting portfolio of things they're involved with. Talk us through what you're up to nowadays.
So I kind of do three pots of things. So IX acquisition, we've been looking at deals for the last couple of years, so very much deal making globally. Digital infrastructure, slightly outside of other tech as well. That's been fantastic. We have met some amazing businesses and some fabulous teams that is opening doors to other projects. The other thing I do, number two, is I chair three sort of startup scale-up businesses. And that's a real privilege because that's very entrepreneurial. I get to see real tech in real life. So that's in health, media tech or embedded software and tech. And then lastly, I do a lot of mentoring and coaching, and a lot of that's in IA entrepreneurship, for example. But I'm also with Ming in tech, which is really important to me, and working on social mobility with my old university, which is the University of Bradford.
Yeah, quite busy, but with quite a lot of exciting projects.
Yeah, lots.
Yeah, and again, a big focus as well on human capital, which is very important, and diversifying the workforce.
Human capital is for any business. You know, you can, someone said, in fact, the first bank I ever raised money with, probably about 20 years ago, a long time ago, said to me, you can take a really good business and ruin it with a terrible management team, or you can take a really bad business and make it amazing with a good management team.
Absolutely. And I think that goes not just for banking, it goes for every single company. I've seen that happen.
We'll compare notes later.
We must. So, Karen, if people want to reach out to you to hear more about what you do and see how maybe can you can help them, how can they do that?
LinkedIn is always best. So Karen Back, London. I'm actually based between France and London, as you know. We met up in Paris a couple of weeks ago. Always up for another croissant gel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, just let me know when you're over. But Karen, thank you so much for talking to me. It's always a pleasure. I could be talking for hours and hours and hours. That's my biggest problem. As for your home, thank you for watching and for tuning into JSA TV Live. Don't forget to check our social channels for more content. Until next time, happy networking.